ladies and germs,
ladies and gentlemen,
guys, I know I say this every time. Hey guys,
hello guys,
hey guys.
No, I don't say hey guys, that's not me.
What's up? It's your boy Samaj, and you're listening to the Me I Am podcast, season 2, hashtag listening and learning. So without further ado, please welcome my friend from down under, Jock Peterson. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. You all came back. You guys are so nice. You guys drag me for saying, hey guys, hi guys, every 5 seconds. You guys drag me for saying every guest was a special guest. But that's okay. It's all true. Because you know what? We're all friends. And sometimes we drag our friends, right? It happens. And you know what? Hey, if your friends can't drag you, then who the hell can? Now, today's guest, welcome back, season 2. Woo! We're back. We're doing this again. Today's guest is someone who is no stranger to a good dragging, giving it and taking it. And it's important to be able to give and take. But aside from that, he runs a very fun show. I do enjoy listening to it. While I don't always agree with what he says, I'm always tuned in. So, you know, something's good. Something's given there, right? So I think you guys, by the end of this, will either love him or hate him. Like Daniel Staub, there's no in between. Please welcome my friend from down under, Jock Peterson. Hello, Jock.
Hey, Samaj. Thanks so much for having me on. Yes, I do like to give and take it. So thank you.
Oh my goodness. So you guys were already having fun. So yes, guys, again, if you didn't hear me, Jock runs a very popular podcast called Unpopular with JP. That is JP for Jock Peterson, where he gives you all of his hot takes, his opinions, and everything in between. But it's not my show. So Jock, tell us about your show.
So my podcast is called Unpopular. I cover I wouldn't say it's specifically a Housewives podcast. Like I always have some like Housewives and Bravo stuff on there, but I also rant about other topics and pop culture stuff. And I guess I try to give a contrarian, it's really a mixture. It's like contrarian takes on unpopular topics and Bravo shows. It was kind of actually inspired by one of the seasons of Beverly Hills because I was always having a completely different opinion to everyone else on social media. So that kind of inspired it. But then, you know, I branch out and I talk about other things in the media. And then I also just like share stuff I love. Some people think that it's all ranting. It's really not. Like when I get into something that I love, I like gush about it, like random stuff. So yeah, it's just it's about me.
Right. As it should be, because it's your show. Your show should be on some level about you, unless you're doing one of those, you know, recap shows that we have 5,000 of. Okay, so how did it all start? Where does it all begin? Take us back.
You know, it's funny. So I started last year. I'm another one of the pandemic pods, which, I mean, you're a pandemic pod. Yes. Most of us are pandemic pods. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But I had wanted to start a podcast for so long. I mean, like 5 years or something. I used to be a blogger back in the day, and then I stopped that. And then I had always thought, you know, I should do a podcast. And I just never had the confidence to do it because I felt like, well, everyone has a podcast. Why would anyone listen to me? It's right. So hard. You know, I've been a content creator before and it's like hard fucking work to get anyone to pay attention. So, you know, I never really did it. And I always thought, you know, if I get cast on a reality show or something, then I'll do it off the back of that. So I tried to make that happen. It didn't happen. And then with the pandemic, eventually I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to try it and go for it. And yeah, it's been doing well so far. And also I would say to everyone, like just pursue what you want to do. Like, don't let those doubts weigh you down because, you know, I could have done it so much earlier and, you know, you'll always be ahead of someone if you start now. Like if you start now, there'll be like a bunch more people like in a year. So you may as well just do it now instead of just putting it off forever.
I agree. Now let's talk about that music blog. So while you said it is a former project, I appreciate how you still incorporate elements of that into your show. Every now and then you'll talk about an album you heard or an artist that's doing something kind of edgy and cool. But tell us about the music blog specifically. Like, how'd you get into that? How long ago was that? Why did it end? Just go all in on the music blog.
Okay, that was way, way back in the day, like back when music blogs were popular. I mean, you're like 25 or something, right?
26.
26. Were music blogs still happening when you were a teenager?
Like, yeah, not even a teenager, like very recently. Like I was following a couple of music blogs recently, like back in 2013, 2014. So yeah, music blogs were still a thing in recent history, I'd say.
blogs were massive for a long time. I feel like they've really fallen off now. Now it's more about like, even a lot of, you see blogs, they turn their Instagram page more into a blog now. So right. I had, you know, like a blog spot originally. And it started because I was doing music industry business at TAFE here in Australia, which is kind of like community college. And I wanted to do something in the music industry at that time. And I didn't have any experience on my resume. And I liked music blogs. And I thought, you know what, I'll start one of my own and see how it goes. And it really took off. And I did it for a few years. But look, eventually I threw the towel in because it's such hard work. It was so hard. I worked on that blog so much. And even though it did well, you've got to be at like such a level to be making a full-time income. And also back then too, look, when I had the blog, like in the early years, like Twitter just came out. So we weren't as like savvy in terms of like how to monetize thing. Like now everyone thinks of everything as a business and my brand and how am I going to make money off this. Back then, like as a social media.
My soaps.
Yeah. 100%. And back then that stuff was just coming out. So, and I was too young, like maybe some of the older people knew how to monetize their shit, like Nicole Bitchy and Love B Scott, they did good, but I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to make a buck off it. Like I would get Google AdSense money, but I was unable to take it to the level that it needed to be at. So eventually I stopped it. Yeah. But, and you know, cause I ended up getting a real job, but it led me into like a journalism career because from that blog, then I got picked up to do freelance articles on like K-pop and music stuff. And then that from there, I got in a newspaper and then I ended up in like real media reporting. So it was good. Mm-hmm. And also when I started my podcast, I was able to think back to the blog and like what worked on the blog that people liked and what didn't. And really what worked on there was just being completely unfiltered and giving, you know, my hot takes and being extreme with my personality. So I thought, you know, I'll take that energy into the podcast, but not with music, into more like reality TV and pop culture.
Gotcha. So speaking of traveling that chaotic energy throughout time and space, so in your own opinion, would you say music blog Jacques or podcast Jacques has gotten more buzz on the internet? Like which era got you more interaction with celebs, more tweets, more engagement? Which one is bringing home the bacon for you?
You know what? That blog was bigger than I understood at the time. Like I look back and I think, wow, like that was like a really big deal. Like I still get people messaging me and it's like fucking 10 years later or something. Right. Saying that they loved it. And I don't think I really understood how popular it was. Like I even did like PlayStation contacted me to like curate like a playlist. They had this on the PS3 era. Oh, wow. They had this like app thing where, so yeah, kind of the blog, but then also now that I'm like savvier and I work in media and like I talk to way more celebs now. Like back then I didn't have any confidence. I didn't know how to reach out to people, whereas now I talk to a lot more like public figures. And I won't say who it is, but literally last night while I was trying to sleep, someone at like 3 a.m. that's on like a huge Bravo show messaged me. They went, I'm obsessed with you and like you're so funny. So I have more interactions now than I did back then. But definitely the blog had a bigger impact overall. But the podcast is going to get there, okay? We're still growing the podcast.
I mean, no, the blog definitely did. I mean, I would imagine that your coveted, now super rare, maybe rarer than, you know, some of these Gerard Keys auction items is your Britney Spears follow on Twitter. You got one of those when she was, you know, with it enough to be doing that. So,
I don't think from the blog, right? I don't think she was ever with it enough to be doing. She was always managed by other people doing. I remember at the time, because I was a big voice in the Britney blogosphere at that time, my
like
blog and like
Me in those places,
yeah, like Breathe On me Mew Mews, like there was a few of them. We were all like these big Britney people, and I covered her relentlessly, so I think her management followed me. I don't think that she followed, but I did have weird interactions with pop, like ones that I even forget. Like I remember Marina and the Diamonds messaged me once telling me to like go fuck myself.
She did.
What'd
you say?
I don't want to repeat what I said, but I wouldn't say it now.
Okay.
But I
all right. Growth. Okay, I'll take it. We got some growth.
No, I definitely was like, people think I'm outspoken now. Holy shit. Like back in the day. And that was like everyone was like more wild then. So
right. It was just a culture.
Like, Yeah. Oh, it was like Perez Hilton, like Sandra Rose, if people remember that. It was just like it was savage. Like, and I'm glad that we're not in that era anymore, because it was too much. But
yeah, we were all telling each other to kill ourselves every 5 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just like balls to the wall. So I would get messages from people, and I had a lot of opportunities that I couldn't even like. I remember when One Direction came out and their first album was blowing up, and the label like asked me to interview them, and I didn't have the confidence to do it. Like, because I'd never like talked to a celebrity. I was just like in my room on my blog, like, you know, basically in my basement. I wasn't in a basement, but you know, it was like that. Whereas now, obviously, I can take those opportunities. But back then, I was just didn't have the confidence to do it.
I see. So, and then I guess in the same vein, what was it like when you started hitting, you know, that larger follower count, like waking up to 1K, 2K, 5K? Like, how did that feel? Like, did you feel like you were getting closer to like your goals while watching your numbers grow?
With the blog, you mean?
Or just in general? Because like, you know, like on Twitter, it's 5,000 now. So like, obviously it didn't come with that overnight. I mean, are you buying bots?
No. I just remembered, you know who actually, because you brought up Britney following me, you know who did follow me? And it was actually her, Lana Del Rey, because I was one of the first people to cover her, and she still follows me. And I want to DM her, but I DM'd her at the time, and the messages are so cringy, and she didn't see them. And now I'm like, I can't message her again because I don't want her to see those messages.
Was it like, yes, queen, oh my God, I love you, queen?
It was just so embarrassing. It was like, oh my God, like you should do like a perfume, because like celebrities are doing perfume. I was like,
it was
like
a business, 22. Right?
It was so embarrassing. I just die thinking of it. But no, I look at the numbers for my podcast. So when I was doing the blog, I actually stopped looking at the numbers when they started getting high, because it gets in your head too much, and you start doing it more for the audience. And then my thing is always to be like authentic to myself. So I don't want to be thinking in my head, oh, if I do this, I'm going to lose numbers, or if I do that, I'm going to get numbers. And it kind of drives you crazy, and you get competitive and like jealous of other people, because then you start comparing yourself to others. So it's best to like leave yourself in a bubble and not worry where everyone else is. As for social media follows, I don't pay attention to that, because my engagement is like rock bottom, because I've been on Twitter for like, I have more engagement on my Instagram now, which has like way less followers than my Twitter, because look, I've been on Twitter since
the beginning,
like, pretty much like over 12 years, 11 years or something. Yeah. And I've had so many personalities on that Twitter. Like, I've had so many different like eras on that Twitter of like, I've had like political Twitter, I've had K-pop Twitter, I've had like hip-hop blog Twitter, I've had housewives Twitter, like so many different lives. So it's like, I'll get followers that are like interested in that, and then my interest in things changes. And then so I have like I actually hate the Twitter. I would change the username, and if I could, but I don't want to lose the blue tick, because the blue tick really helps you with when you're trying to like reach out to people and stuff. And I have certain like important like media people and stuff that follow me on there that I've made like amazing contacts with, so I can't get rid of it. But if I didn't have that, I would get rid of it, because I hate it, and I feel like the following is like fake, because there's only like
stands,
a small
right?
fraction of those people
jump
that I
from
talk
stand-up
to
stand-up to
yeah
stand-up.
Yeah that's no, by I mean, the way, that's important to know, just in general, when you if you are doing content creating. And I've struggled with it with my new show, in terms, because I like to do broader stuff, and then I always go like, God, should I just be talking about this one thing? Or but you do kind of have to if you jump around with too many things, you can't build an audience.
Yeah, because then the stands are going to cancel you.
Yeah, and they do what they don't know is they're like, hey, I'm following you for this, why are you talking about this, you know?
Yeah. Like how I signed up for Honey Boo Boo, and it's been, today's the first time in months that you mentioned her on the pod.
I know. That's so funny that people loved my Honey Boo Boo recaps. But, you know, I got through most of the season. I think there was like a handful of episodes left. And I'm definitely going to go all in on Honey Boo Boo next season.
Yes, because I love the Southern American accent that you pull out from time to time, which is really great. Really enjoy that. And speaking of things we enjoy, so last thing on the blog of it all, what is it like with the blog and Ben and now current day, when you do get picked up by a news outlet, like, you know, do they reach out to you and say, hey, you know, we're going to, you know, use this clip from you? Or like, what is that whole shebang like?
You know what? That is so overrated. A lot of that is more the perception it's stronger than the reality. You don't get, first of all, when you get picked up by media, you actually don't get that many clicks from it at all. Like, you would be surprised. Like, most people don't click through. Like, the most viral story that I ever had from my podcast so far was when I had Erica Rose on, a former Bachelor star.
Yes.
And she talked about this, yeah, this really horrible challenge that she had to do on Bachelor in Paradise, where they like threw eggs at the least attractive woman on there. And that got picked up everywhere. Like, that even got in Page Six, which was my goal. And that episode did well, but it didn't do what you would think it would do for all of the pickup. Like, you get way more, like, if another podcaster or something, like, right, shares the link or, like, gives you a shout-out, you know what I mean?
Than organically, the media. Like, yeah.
Yeah, the media doesn't have as much influence as people think. Like, a lot of the stuff in the media, really, it's just content, but people aren't invested in it and they're not engaged. They're just scrolling through, they're skimming, like, a paragraph, they're skimming a headline, whereas with something like a podcast, it's so intimate, and then the people that are really, like, listening to you are super engaged with you. So, yeah, look, the getting in the media, it's more optics. Like, I like it for the optics because it makes me look more important than I actually am. Like, even when I signed with the podcast network here in Australia.
Well, nice. Congrats.
And yeah, and but I didn't, like, when I signed with them, my podcast wasn't even big enough to need a network, because I wasn't planning to do ads yet. Because, like, to do HostRed ads, you've got to be at, like, a certain number, and I wasn't even at the number for it. But I'm like, I'm just going to sign with the network for the perception, because it makes me look more, like, it makes me look bigger than I am. You know what I mean? It's like, fake it till you make it.
Better so to have than, like, have not. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, look, he signed the show. And it's like, really not. It's just like hustling. So most of that stuff is just like smoke and mirrors, honestly.
You and Renna have it in common.
Yes.
So, but then again, you know, at least you know that, you know, the content is what it's given what it needs to give, because you recently launched a Patreon, and every week you have new people to shout out for people who join. So obviously somebody is listening, and the numbers are there, right?
The Patreon is doing really well. Yeah, that's the thing. I found the engagement with my podcast is, like, really high for the numbers that I have. And I see people that I know have bigger podcasts than me, but they don't have the amount of subscribers. So that's good. And yeah, I do look at the numbers. I hate to have to look at that stuff, but it's just like, I want the podcast to do well. So it's kind of got to, you do have to look at that stuff, but I just try not to let it get in my head too much, because you don't want to overthink it, and then it sort of ruins what makes the show good in the first place, you know?
Absolutely. Okay, give me one second here. Yeah, so now up to the thing that, let's say, like, really brought us together. So obviously one of your larger topics that you cover that I really enjoy is the Housewives, Real Housewives franchise. All the cities, all the girls, lights, the glam, the dolls, everything, right? So I know that you particularly are fond of our flagship, Orange County. And I, too, am fond of our flagship, Orange County. Past years, not recent years, past years. So I'd like to take a little trip down memory lane with you. And I actually took a compile, just, you know, a little listicle for me here of some of your favorite moments. So roll me into either your top five, whatever, like your greatest moments, your underrated moments, just roll me into your list. What is your number five moment?
Well, you know what? I actually could only come up with three, because the thing is, what? Right, so I love OC, but let me tell you something about me being a fan of the Housewives. I'm not someone that just goes back and, like, rewatches season after season. You know what I mean? Like, I watch the season and then I'm done. And then I watch clips on YouTube. Like, I go in the YouTube hole of, like, rewatching Housewives fights, but I don't rewatch every season. And with so much, I was like, I could, you know, I was thinking back, and I know that if I, like, rewatch every season right off the top of my head, I would probably have a lot of these, like, moments from the very early seasons. Of, like, because I love the old, like, I mean, I love all of OC, but I love the really old school.
The original.
Like, those first seasons, because it's so interesting and, like, such a documentary. So I could only think of, like, three kind of off the top of my head. But one of the OG moments is when the OC Angels have their fight. I think that's in, like, season one or two, because it was so trashy, and that was so interesting to me, those early seasons, because it really did feel like a documentary, and you really are getting a look into a certain kind of lifestyle, like that white, blonde, like, privileged OC lifestyle, which it feels like a whole nother world. You're like, who are these people?
It is. I mean, that was the time when Bravo condoned violence, because now we don't do it, allegedly. But, you know, back then, yeah, we totally saw those two teenage girls just scrapping in the studio.
I know. Crazy. And just being them being like energy drink models, like we, you know, I'm from a small town. I moved to Sydney when I was 16, which is like the sort of the biggest city in Australia. But
okay.
I'm from that small town where the girls are the grid girls that, you know, like we have like the motocross, they're like those motocross kind of girls and stuff. And they go and they do like energy drink promotions at them. And yeah. Stuff. I'm like from that world. So
gotcha.
Seeing that on OC was kind of, I like things that are, you know, reminiscent of where I came from. Like I'm watching Welcome to Plathville at the moment on TLC and there's a girl on that, this teenage girl, and I'm like, oh, she reminds me of the girls that I kind of grew up with, like an American version. So I like that nostalgia.
Interesting. So it gives you a special kind of jolt. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have the OC Angel energy drink model. That's one. What's your second one?
Okay. I love Kelly Dodd's sushi night when she just loses it. And I love when she says, "You're a freaking cunt." And
that was wild. I was scared. I'm like, something's wrong. You know, as our grand dame Karen said, there's something medical. Something's medically wrong with her. I thought something was medically wrong with Kelly watching that scene.
I loved the escalation of just how full of rage she was getting and how heated she was getting. And like, even though it's an extreme reaction, I feel like that was justified. It's because you're coming on this show for the first time and you do have people kind of like poking at you a little bit and
right.
making digs, and you're in this environment. And then to see her go to that level and then to explode like she did, and to the point that like, I'm a big Heather Dubrow fan,
right.
but I like Kelly Dodd too. I love Kelly and Heather. And for her to like run Heather off the show, and then when Heather's crying in the limo to Terry, she's like, it was so horrible, like it's so fucking funny. And then even after it, when they're out there and then Kelly's like normal again and she's like, oh, I didn't mean that, and Tamara's like, you can't say that to people.
Yeah.
Kelly. Like she just goes
Scary.
To that level and comes down. So I love that. I rewatched that one like a lot.
I was totally on board with Heather. I'm like, so you need to leave. I don't know what's going on here, but you actually need to not be in this room anymore, because obviously you can't handle this. Obviously, I'm triggering you. Someone's triggering you. And poor Megan in the corner, she's like, this is my friend. This is the girl I bought on. Like, she's like, I have never seen this side of Kelly Dodd in my life before. I don't know who this woman is. Like, neither do we, girl. Neither
well,
do we.
I don't think she even barely, I mean, she barely knew Kelly. Come on. They probably met once or something. And then
I don't know. She bought her on. She was her friend.
That's, I mean, I know.
And I know that's, but yeah. I can also see that. Because again, that's one thing about Orange County. Even if like they loosely know each other because they're all in that kind of Newport Beach area, I feel like they do know each other more than, say, you know, like a New York housewife would claim to know someone when there's five boroughs and, like, you know, Long Island and everything else.
Yeah, that's
like they're so small.
Yeah, well, that, like, side note, that is why the OC, I mean, my current favorites is like Potomac and the OC. Sort of, you know, OC is sort of my all-time fave, and then the current fave of recent years is definitely Potomac because it's amazing. But with OC, it is like this real, still this little bubble mm-hmm. community, and none of the other shows really have that at all.
No.
Like maybe Jersey a little bit, but they seem to have a lot of trouble casting Jersey.
Jersey's huge. Jersey's a huge state. It takes hours to drive to that state.
Yeah, whereas with the OC, you do feel like they're still in that. And that's why I'm a little, I mean, we'll probably get to that actually the
yeah.
next season, right? So I'll give you my thoughts on that coming up.
Yes. And all right, so give us your last OC moment here.
Okay, the other one that came to mind when you sent that was at the reunion when Tamara and, because Tamara's my all-time favorite housewife, and Tamara
Amazing
and Alexis.
Housewife.
Yeah, so good. And Tamara and Alexis are going at it, and when Tamara goes, I don't know what it is verbatim, but she's like, coming from the mom who dropped her kids in the pool while they were strapped to a stroller while you were doing shots. And that's, it's so below the belt. It's so shocking.
Yeah.
And then what makes it even funnier is that Alexis doesn't deny it. She's like, Jim got them out of the pool. So she's basically like, she doesn't even say
she's
that.
Agreeing to it, yeah.
Other housewives would deny it and they'll go, that's a lie. And they would like take it to their grave. She literally
talked
like,
about my children,
it.
You talked about yeah. my family. Right. That's when yeah. Teresa would have pushed her into the pool. Yeah.
She admits it straight away, which is so fucking funny. I mean, there's another similar moment like that with Tamara at the reunion with Gretchen when Tamara gives her, obviously this is a rehearsed line, but this was like quite iconic at the time when she says, is your ass jealous of the shit that comes out of your mouth. And Gretchen's kind of taken aback and she goes, yes. And like she says yes. And it's like, you're not meant to say yes to that. Like,
no, so. Literally, Tamara is a penultimate housewife. Even though she's a veteran, she's just as much of that show as Vicky is. Because, like, you know, their fight is very much in the same vein of, like, you know, a Karen versus Giselle, a Jill versus Bethany, a Bethany versus Ramon. Like, those two, they were just TV gold. That chemistry, unmatched.
Well, I think I rate Tamara as the true OG, the OC. Like, Vicky's amazing, but I like Tamara really, and I think people appreciate it now. Yeah. I don't think people appreciated when she was on the show, and then when she left, they kind of were like, oh, wait. Tamara, like, changed the game. Like, Tamara changed this whole fucking franchise.
Tammy Sue understood the assignment. Tammy Sue really did.
She was like she was the first person to ever understand the assignment. And I think when she left, people, you know, realized it. But it's just a shame because that we see that happen all the time in The Housewives is when the housewife is on the show, people don't like them. And then as soon as they're gone, people flip around. They go, oh, we actually loved so-and-so. And bring it's like, back. Well, yeah.
Well, speaking of bringing people back, so my little listicle here is a deep cut. It is season 12. And all my moments are from episodes 3 and 4. Of season 12. So my first moment, Lydia meeting Shannon. We've got Lydia coming over to Tamara's granddaughter's birthday party where she comes to meet Shannon Bedore for the first time. And when they finally do meet up, she's like, hi, I'm Lydia. Oh, hi, I'm Shannon. Nice to meet you. She's like, you have a wonderful aura. She's like, my mom is going to bust you with confetti dust. And she's like, oh, no. I don't want any confetti dust. Like, and I just love how literally anytime it's anyone new, Shannon can't handle it. She freezes. She's like, I can't handle it. Like, literally, she's like, oh, she's like, you know, I met your mother before. She's like, oh, yeah, she's going to bust you. And then her mom goes over. She's like, oh, I'm going to sprinkle you. She's like, ah, like Shannon's literally screaming. She's literally like trying to run away and scream. And then, of course, you know, Lydia brings up Vicky. She's like, so, you know, I met your friend Vicky over there. She's like, my friend, don't talk. She's like, I don't want to hear anything about Vicky. She's like, oh, well, you know, I'm kind of, you know, listening to your fight with her and Tamara and you. And you guys are kind of alike. And then Shannon loses. She's like, don't you ever call me Vicky Gumbs. I am nothing like her. And Lydia's like, whoa, man, you're screaming. You're yelling at me. And then 2 minutes later, jumping right to, I don't think we're going to get along. Just that whole little exchange.
So good.
And Tamara popping and going, well, you know, Shannon, you know, Vicky did say this, blah, blah, blah. Tamara just being the perfect producer, just sliding right in, just going, oh my God, no, I want you guys to get along. But Shannon, you can get a little crazy like Vicky sometimes. Like the way Tamara just can seamlessly go from your friend to your producer to your worst enemy.
She did that at the sushi night when she says, what's that? She asked some question that set that actually, if you watch that closely, it's sort of like Tamara that kind of spirals Kelly.
I definitely missed that.
It's a good observation there with that scene with Lydia.
Tamara is so flawless with her weaving in and out.
Do you like Lydia, by the way? I think Lydia was really good on the show.
My second moment is Lydia trying to figure out how her and Doug are going to finish the Nobleman magazine shoot. So I love how she goes, Doug is just so calm, cool, and collected with this magazine. I don't know how we're going to get it done. And I'm just a whirling dervish in the corner. I mean, who says that? Like, whirling dervish? That vocabulary is so, like, out of whack. And she's like, you know, she's like, I just see Doug and I cry. He's my Prince Charming. But then also in the same breath of the next scene goes, so Doug is too soft. Sometimes I just wish he would grow some balls and be like my dad or my grandpa. They were tough, cold, hard businessmen from Canada. Like, what, girl?
Lydia is one of my more controversial takes that I like her. Like, people give me so much shit for liking Teddy and liking Lydia. And I don't think that Lydia brought a lot in the solo, like some of the solo stuff, like the Doug's balls, I thought was one of the worst storylines I've ever seen.
I love that because that's so Housewives. It's light. There's no stakes. It's nonsensical.
It was just, but I loved her in the group dynamic, like the way that she got Shannon together. She got Megan together too at that reunion.
A little bit,
so
yeah,
she got under Heather's skin. Like Lydia is like underrated in terms of
the original Nat.
Yeah, she is 100%.
Yes, and then also flashing back to the party, it's a little moment, little tiny moment, but you know when Shannon was still with BDI Bedore. Her ex-husband, when they all got to the party, David runs over to go find Eddie, and she's like, I can't find my husband. She's like, oh, he's with this bro, my brother from another mother. Like, you know, Shannon, her little confessional and her little outburst. And I love how I love how David goes, bro, when I see you, you're always eating. And he goes, oh, well, Tamara doesn't feed me. She only gives me beer. To then cut to a scene about 2 minutes later of Tamara like babying her daughter's guinea pig, literally feeding her, feeding the guinea pig lettuce with her hand. So it's like, you're going to feed the guinea pig, but you're going to starve Eddie. Like, I just love how she's got, you know, the range. She can starve her husband and take care of her daughter's guinea pig, which is really great. And then I got two more moments for you. Next is another underrated queen, Detective MKE. It's the scene where she's in the kitchen with Jimmy and baby Aspen is born. That was like one of my favorite storylines because I'm like, you know, she really wanted that baby. She was willing to be a single mother just to get this kid.
No, she wanted that bell. My God. I mean, it wasn't a baby. That was her entire run on the show.
It was.
Wasn't it? Wanting a baby was her mm-hmm. whole solo storyline besides the Vicky thing.
It was. And Jimmy's like, listen, we'll have this baby. He's like, well, understand, this is going to be your baby. Very much in the vein of Ashley Darby. Michael's like, if you want this baby, you can have it. But understand, this is your, not our baby, not my baby, your baby. So it's a scene of them in the kitchen and Megan is breastfeeding. And she's like, I think I'm a granola mom. You know, one of those natural moms doing the breastfeeding. And Jimmy's like, granola mom. He's like, do granola moms have Gucci bags? She's like, do granola moms have Dior diaper bags? She's like, well, he's like, I don't think so. And just the way he looked at her and then looked down at like the bills, you could tell that was the moment he was like, yeah, I'm done with her. He's like, you know what, Vicky, you were right. I am going to be divorced from this woman in 5 years. So I really enjoyed that. And then I thought maybe she could redeem herself. She goes, Jimmy, she's like, do you think Aspen can see ghosts? And he's like, what? She's like, well, you know, babies just came from the other side. They just came from the spirit world. So it's not socially unacceptable for them to see ghosts.
It's so, yeah, she did have some good moments. She wasn't a favorite of mine, but like there was some gems in there.
Yes. And then I've got Shannon at the doctor when she's doing her way in. Now, it's moments like these where I really did love Shannon because she was so vulnerable. I know I would not be putting my whole weight out on national television and my BMI and have this man tell me I'm close to death. I'm on a fast track to death. Take pictures of me going, whoa, wow, okay. And then all that to have him ask me about my husband and go, oh, he's a beast, he's a monster, he's fit. You got to work on this. Like, he was such an asshole, the doctor. He's like, oh,
I mean,
like,
I was always team David Bedore. He always was like, hey, come work out with me, Shannon. Like, when she was like, would just give him all this passive aggressive bullshit. And it's like, okay, you know, you wonder why he ended up with another woman. Like, she wouldn't do anything with him. Like, he would come in the kitchen and eat a chip. She'd be angry. Like, he could not do anything right. So I'm team David all day. I hate Shannon.
Right. And my last moment for Orange County is the Peggy Salahian of it all, Housewife 100. I enjoyed her. She was our diversity pick that season, okay? She
not
was
Housewife 100.
She was not, you know, American. She was not blonde. So, you know, not being blonde is huge for OC. That was diversity for years, just not being a blonde. So she was not blonde and she wasn't, you know, what's the word? So even though her race was white, her ethnicity was not. She was Armenian. She was, you know, Kardashian adjacent. And I feel like had she had time to develop, she could have been like, you know, a B-list or like a B-grade Yolanda. Currently, she's like, you know, an underdeveloped C-list Yolanda because, you know, she had like the husband, they had, you know, the money. She had like, you know, the idiosyncrasies and the malapropisms. I feel like had we had time to develop Peggy, she could have been a B-list Yolanda.
No, because there was not one scene of that whole season where anything even felt like it was like she was an alien on another planet. Like it just... that was like the worst casting. And I actually liked her individually. And I interviewed her on my podcast and I thought she was nice. And I never had a problem.
He's a great like, house husband. Like he's actually what the bar should be at.
Yeah, he was good. And I never, watching Peggy, I never was like, oh, she's horrible. But I'm like, this fit does not work. And the fact they got rid of Heather and had Peggy, like, so you go from one of the greatest housewives of like all time across all franchises and then have Peggy in there. It was like, people just don't work. But, you know, OC has bad casting a lot of the time. Like they get rid of a lot of people that they should not be getting rid of. So, you know, like they should, I don't think they should have got rid of Lydia. Like they should never have got rid of Heather, obviously.
Lizzie,
I mean, there's so many
Lizzie
people.
Lizzie was fun. She could have been developed and turned into a great housewife.
Yeah, like Gretchen, like just so many of, like there's been so many good housewives on that show that have like, I mean, they shouldn't have got rid of Tamara. Like it's just, you know,
right. But yeah, you know, it is what it is. And it's funny that you say, you know, we lose Heather and we gain Peggy. It almost takes me back to a space of bye bye Bethany, hello Cindy. Except Peggy was likable. There was nothing to like about Cindy. And I've watched that.
I didn't think Cindy was that bad.
She was I watched that season so many times, you know, not thinking of her as just Cindy, not Bethany's replacement. Like I watched season four times just to make sure I was right not liking her. And she just was not good. It wasn't her time. You know what? Like, if anything, it wasn't her time.
With Cindy, I will say I haven't watched that season. I only watched that season like once and then I never watched it again. Mm-hmm. So maybe if I rewatched it now with like fresh eyes and like a different perspective when I watched it with her, I didn't think she was that bad. I remember I liked when she stood up to them about like the pecking. I didn't think she was that bad. I thought it was very hard to come into, obviously, A, replacing Bethany. And those women on that, by that point, they had become so crazed with fame and so over the top. Like that reunion is like one of the most toxic reunions where it's just like screaming at each other of Jill and Alex and Ramona and stuff. It was like, who could have even stood a chance coming in on right. that season? And yeah, and
Kodak they party should, alone.
They did make a mistake. Oh, yeah, yeah. And they did make a mistake, right, in the fact that casting someone like Cindy, it was too obvious that like we want a Bethany type. You know what I mean? So right. then it gave her this unfair comparison. Like maybe if she'd come in at a different season when it wasn't right off the back of Bethany. Yes. Like they
maybe
probably
before
should...
or maybe a few after. Like maybe six yeah. or seven she could have been sprinkled in there.
Yeah, exactly. It was just that didn't work. I don't and think I can you can do it. That. I don't think you can come in. Like it's the same with Peggy though, because they thought Peggy was like the same as Heather. They're like, oh, she's rich and she's sort of like right. classy and she's brunette. And it's like,
Cindy
no,
has a business. Bethany has a business. They're businesswomen. Yeah. yeah.
That's what they think. And it's like, you can't, but I do, I don't know. You can, I get casting a similar character type, but it can't be like that identical. Like on Beverly Hills, I feel like Teddy, that's Eileen, true. And Crystal are all kind of similar character types. And I feel like you went from Eileen and then you went to Teddy and then you went to Crystal, which is just sort of a bit of a straight shooter and like sensible and not overly into drama, but they all are like very different at the same time. So I feel like it works on that thing. But then when you just try to make it too close of a match, it's like
I liked Eileen. I really did I like her. I thought she was warm and wholesome and fun and lighthearted. And I really felt for her on the boat in Hong Kong. I feel like Erica really did just try to, you know, pop off and be Monster Girardi. And
that was so heartbreaking because it's like Eileen's the nicest person ever. And then to see her upset like that. But Eileen's a beast. Like Eileen, the way she came for LVP, like most girls did not have
she
those
did.
Balls. Rina didn't have the balls to come for LVP at that time. Rina was like pussyfooting around and Eileen was the one that was like, no, like this is whack. Like Eileen kind of pushed that. So
she started that
Eileen.
Ball for sure.
Yeah. And then Teddy did. Finished it. Teddy finished what Eileen started.
I hope she comes on your podcast because the way you talk this girl up, she should be paying you. Theodore should be sending checks to your address every month for keeping her name in the press.
Well, you know
no
what?
No one talks about Teddy like you.
I reached out to Teddy when I started my podcast and basically mm-hmm. her management was a bit like, look, let's wait and see because obviously my show was new. And right. I haven't followed it up yet, but I'm...
Rude,
it's
wait.
Just more, it's
her
out
team
of laziness.
Told you to wait and see?
Sort of, yeah. Like, they were a bit...
For what?
Because my show was... I think they just wanted to see how my show went. Because, look, oh people start God. Podcasts and they disappear. No, I get
okay,
it.
Okay, from that... Come for Teddy, girl. They should be running to your inbox.
Well, maybe now
someone
they
wants
would
to talk
be.
To Teddy.
This was fresher from when she was fired. So she was still like, she was doing bigger shows. Like she just did, she had done Nick Viall's podcast, which is like one of the biggest Bachelor podcasts and stuff.
Is
so
it?
She was doing, yeah, it's, that's a really big one. Okay. So she was doing stuff like that. So, but I feel like now, so I'm actually going to chase that up because.
I mean, please. Know. I mean, no one has worked harder for Teddy than you.
Oh. And I'm going to make people like Teddy because people didn't like Leah and then they heard Leah on my podcast and every single message I got was like, oh, I like Leah now, so I'm going to work that. And the same with Tamra. People didn't like Tamra and then I had
really?
Tamra on my first episode. Yeah, people were like hating on her and they're like, oh, this is the... They're like, message me. He's like, oh, I actually really... Now I want Tamra back. And then he had Tamra on his podcast
he
after
did.
That. So
that was a good interview like, too.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to work my magic on Teddy and people are going to go, oh my God, we misjudged... We misjudged Teddy.
Your cult leader. I hope you ask her about her business. Because, you know, they famously say...
I support her business. I think is, I mean, I'm not a patron of the, it's too expensive, but I don't have a problem with it. If I could afford to have someone to text me to, like, last night I was eating, like, just, like, brownies and, like I was eating the worst food. I'm like, mm-hmm. I need Teddy Mellencamp texting me going, don't eat that fucking brownie, like, work out. So I love it. If I could afford it, I would be all in with Teddy Mellencamp.
Oof. Well... That's a hot topic. That's a controversy. So we're going to end this show with a little bit of controversy. You know that song, right? Natalia Kills Controversy.
Yes. Oh, she was another, you know what? Sorry to make it all about
Teddy Sinclair.
Blog.
No, it's about you today, boo. It's all about you today. That's what we're here for.
She was one of the first people with my blog. She was one of the few people I talked to. And we were like friendly, and she wanted me when she was launching her first album. She wanted me.
Oh,
to
so
write.
Still Natalia Kills, so not even Teddy
It was
Cruel
still
Youth.
Natalia Kills era.
Okay,
and
gotcha.
It was Teddy when Sinclair. She was doing. Actually, no, it was when she was doing the second album, the one that had like Trouble and
Controversy. Saturday Night.
Problem. She wanted me to write the press release for that because she was like, "No one gets me as an artist like you," because I was a fan of hers and she liked my blog, and I wasn't confident enough to do it. And I actually last year tried to reach out to her because, you know, we were sort of friendly back in the day. And I was thinking,
and now you're ready.
And I was thinking she'd be fun to have on the podcast because I think she got totally screwed over with that X Factor New Zealand thing. Yeah. Like they 100% told them, you need to be the villains. And like, they went too far, but. They did cross the line, but it's like that was obviously set up and everything. And then it like ruined her. And I would love to just.
A great Housewives moment. If we did that on Housewives, I'm like, oh my God, Natalia.
Yeah, I know. I think she just got. She still follows me, but she doesn't really. She hasn't used Twitter in like 2 years. So I can't get her on Twitter. And
maybe Instagram Cruel Youth.
Yeah, I tried Instagram, but she never opened the message because obviously she just went to her unread folder. So. You know, it's a shame, but I would like to link up with Teddy. I like controversial people.
Let's put it out there. Jacques and Natalia Kills 2021.
Yes.
I hope Natalia. So. That'll be good. The music's good. I tried to see her live, but my fic idea wasn't ready yet. So I couldn't get into the venue she was playing. Same thing with Azalea Banks. I was never old enough. I missed out on her. I missed out on some early Charlie XCX shows when she would play like those 21 plus venues like in Brooklyn. I tried one time they took my fic ID. So I just have bad luck. Now I'm way too old, but you know, like I just look back fondly.
I'm so glad that I got to see Sky Ferreira live in Sydney because, I mean, she hasn't had an album out in God knows when she's ever going to come back to the music
scene. Her and Rihanna, they should just team up and release a joint album.
I know. You know, they would actually suit a collaboration together.
Yeah,
like, that would be sick. I think the next Rihanna album, if they had a fucking featuring Sky Ferreira, that would be fire.
I met her on the street once. I met Sky Ferreira on the street in Brooklyn while waiting in line for the Betty Who concert.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah, I'm like, Sky, she's like, she was like, her face was like, you know who I am? I'm like, yes, queen. It was like a few months after Nighttime, My Time, it came out.
Oh.
It was when she was doing like her tomboy thing. Like she had the black hair, the beanies and like the big jackets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, wow, this is going to be the best day ever. Betty's huge. It's crazy. All right. So you guys know I have lived and gone through and experienced many, many eras in my life. Well, here's a new one that I'm so excited about. So as you know, I'm very much so a man on the go, a man about town. And I'm sure you're wondering, how do I do it? How do I keep up? How do I stay awake? Well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. And that secret is Proteus Brews. Yeah, Proteus Brews. So it is the cutest, chicest little coffee shop that I have found at the Proteus Bicycles Bike Shop. So yes, bikes and coffee, you can't get any chicer than that, right? But no, Proteus Brews is located inside the Proteus Bicycles Bike Shop. They're open Tuesday through Sunday. And you can get handcrafted lattes, espresso drinks, hot chocolate, iced tea, coffee, you name it. All made by hand, all made to order. And you can even get fresh pastries from local bakeries. I mean, Proteus Brews is just truly the chicest coffee shop around. And it helps keep me going Monday through Friday, 7 days a week, around the clock, from the back in the middle to around again. Cody's Brews is my friend. So hey, come visit. Come visit.